Welcome to Off the Cuff with SDJ, a podcast about everyday life from the spiritual, the physical, and the metaphysical perspective. Each week, I'll bring you episodes that have a casual, laid-back, informal, and spontaneous look at this thing we call life. I'm Sunny Dawn Johnston. Now let's get started. Hello, 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 my friends. Welcome to Off the Cuff with SDJ. So excited to be here. It's been a couple of weeks. I have been out of town and traveling, hit the road in my RV, my husband and I, and we've been around the block a couple times. So happy to be back and so excited for my interview today. So come on in, my friends, say hello. Let me know that you can hear me and see me okay. And let's get ready to bring on our guest for the day, Jacob Nordby. I'm really excited to have him here because this guy is, he's such a great writer, quite honestly, just such a great writer. And I'm excited to have him share some thoughts and ideas around creativity. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And why the world needs more creativity right now. So come on in, guys. Hello, hello. Good to see you all. Happy to be back in at my regular time and not have so many replays. So this one is live, my friends. And so if you're just joining right now, Off the Cuff with SDJ is an opportunity to for me to be able to interview change makers, people that are lighting up the world in a variety of different ways and help you to get to know them as well. So that's one of my passions, is not only to get to know a little bit about what they do, but more importantly, who they are. And so we're going to dig in with Jacob and let you know a little more about who he is. So as you all are jumping on, I'm going to go and bring Jacob in and you guys can welcome him and let's get started. All right. Hey there, my friend.
Hey, Sunny. How are you?
I'm really good. Good to have you here.
You're looking awful well. You must get sunshine where you are.
Well, you know, I've been a Lake Powell for 5 days, so that gave me a little extra sunshine for sure.
Good.
Yeah, you're in Idaho. Is it getting cold yet?
It is. It's a beautiful fall day right now, but I can feel the you know, the sun is starting to go away from here for a few months. So
yeah. Yeah, I do remember that. When I was raised in Utah, I remember when the sun would go away. And as soon as I got old enough, I said, wherever there's sun most of the time, that's where I'm going. With a name like Sunny Dawn, you know, I think it's kind of ingrained in me.
Yeah, you were born for that.
That's right. That's right. All right, my friend. So I'm going to read your bio and let everybody know a little bit about who you are. And then we're going to jump in. All right.
All right.
Okay, so Jacob Nordby, first of all, he is my publishing brother, I guess, is what we call us, because we come from the same publishing family. So he's the author of Divine Arsonist, A Tale of Awakening, and Blessed Are the Weird, a manifesto for creatives. His words have been translated into many languages and shared around the world. He leads the Creative Unboot Camp course for students around the world and offers transformational group retreats and individual creative guidance sessions. His third book, The Creative Cure, is set to release by Hierophants Publishing in February of 2021. Awesome. Congratulations. With a foreword by Julia Cameron. That's awesome. You can preview it on Amazon at the end, guys. I will put the link up so you can grab the link if you want to go and check it out on Amazon. All right, my friend. Welcome, Jacob.
Thank you. I'm just glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here too. I've been gone for a couple of weeks, so I'm happy to be back in the groove, so to speak.
Yeah.
So we're talking creativity. So you are a writer and a creative guide. First of all, tell me what a creative guide is. Like, what does that mean to you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I just a few minutes before we got on here, finished a session with someone, and I love the sense of guide. I love coaches, I love therapists, I love so many different versions of people who help people. But guide for me really rings true, because it's about reflecting the person's inner wisdom. And It's saying, okay, I've been over this terrain, but your map is your map, not my map. So rather than hand you a list of things to do, let's tune into what already exists inside of you. And then we begin to work through, you know, the process of alignment of who am I? What would I truly desire? What do I want to create?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I agree. I really resonate with the word guide as well. It just feels, I don't know, it just feels more in alignment for me. It always has. So mm-hmm. I love that. So do you help people, to reflect the creativity that's already inside of them and kind of help channel it? Or to discover it? Because I think, you know, for years, people would tell me I was creative all the time. And my idea of creativity was, my dad was a graphic artist in the military. And so my idea of creativity was art. That was it. Like, I had no other, couldn't be, you know, the way you decorated your house, the way you dressed, or the way that you created programs. It was just art. And everybody would say, you're so creative. And I'd be like, I don't have a creative bone in my body. So for people that struggle with that idea of kind of owning that creativity, is that part of what a creative guide would do?
Wow, I'm so happy you articulated your own version of that, Sunny, because I think that's one of the most common things I hear from people is, I'm just not that creative.
Yeah.
In fact, the World Economic Forum last year, they do every 5 years, they do a massive study. These are big, you know, data, big money people. And so they did this massive study on the top job skills needed for 2020, for the year we're in now. And since 2015, creativity moved from like the bottom of the list up to number three. Some other things like empathy and some softer skills came up into this list. And again, this is the World Economic Forum. So I did a study with 10,000 people and said, what's your greatest struggle with creativity? 74.3% came back and said, I doubt my talents and abilities. I don't think I'm good enough. Mm-hmm. So here we have the world recognizing in black and white terms, we need to get in touch with this creativity and use it. And a vast majority of us say, I don't know if I even have any of it, or I doubt that I can get there.
Yeah. And the thing is we've created an entire life. We are creators by nature. It's who we are. It's what we are. It's what we do on a day-to-day basis. And yet we don't feel creative.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I would love, you know, this sentence did not make it into the book. You've worked with Randy Davila, our publisher, and his editing team. So they softened this up a little bit, but the draft I sent in started with, we need to rescue creativity from the arts. Mm-hmm. Not that they don't get to have it anymore, but that everyone is, in fact, I would love if everyone watching right now would just put your hand on your heart and just take a minute and just feel that organ that's been pumping away thousands of times just today, whether you know it or not. The energy that is making your heart beat is the same energy of life that also makes the trees grow and it makes the galaxies spin around in orderly fashion. And so if we can really take the idea of what the energy of creativity is, the energy of life, what about that idea? Mm-hmm. Now what does that mean? And as you just said, I love that, like, we're creating every day. Mm-hmm. Every time we take a breath, every thought we think, every decision we make is part of creating this thing we call life.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, I assume maybe not that we all kind of have our different perspectives based on, of course, how we were raised and all that. Like, for me, the comparison of a creative person is artistic. It's not, there wasn't any other explanation for it. So even though I had, you know, Cyndi Lauper eyeshadow going and could wear, you know, makeup like, you know, crazy, I never would have considered that creative because that was not accepted.
Right.
So that expression. And so I think creativity is something that only in the last probably 10 years have I actually been like, I am creative. Oh my gosh. I am. I create all kinds of things, you know? And I think when we can own that, like, I love that the World Economic Forum brought that, has created the awareness for us of how important that is now. And that when, and if we all have that naturally, then what we need to do is tap into it.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like the creative self, it can go by a lot of different names: the inner self, the true self, the original self. And so I don't feel like that self is ever actually damaged or lost, Sunny. I feel like the process of living, and well, in the new book, I talk about there's three main enemies of creativity. It's socialization. It's the process of becoming educated to become an adult human. Mm-hmm. There's the rejection, the fear of it. And those are very closely connected to each other. And then there's the traumatic experiences. And some have had really a lot of trauma. And so those things work together to actually damage or create static in the connection that each of us has to this creative self. Mm-hmm. So healing that connection, I feel, is the real job we have.
Yeah. So we're not necessarily losing it, but it's covered up or it's disconnected by all of these other experiences or situations that have happened. Like maybe like an F in art mm-hmm. when you're a kid like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I love because I think that when you were saying, you know, that most people said, I don't feel good enough. Mm-hmm. And creativity is such a, like, how would you know, or how maybe do you explain to your clients, how would you know if you are good enough? Like what's the measuring device? With creativity, what is the measuring device?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, let me just rewind a little bit. I've come to understand that what we believe about our creativity is what we believe about ourselves. Mm. So if I say my creativity isn't very good, or I don't think I'm good enough, what we're really saying is I don't really believe in myself. And so this begins a process, Sunny, of what I've come to understand is kind of a threefold process. It's self-discovery. It's who am I? And beginning to learn more about that. And then that naturally leads to self-acceptance. The more I learn about who this person is, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, wow, that's interesting. I really like that person. And not at first. Like a lot of times at first, there's this, oh, my God. It's kind of like me. I'm gonna say something vulnerable here. So I really hate to be on video, especially when I can watch myself talking right in front of myself because my mouth does really weird stuff. So I watch you and you're like, I'm like, oh, my God, she looks great on video. No, but I'm sharing that to say I think that self-discovery and self-acceptance, that's part of the process of healing that connection to the creative self. And so sometimes it's just a matter of exposure, like, you know, me doing this over and over again on video. It's like, all right, that's how you look. That's what it is. Right. But at first it doesn't feel – and I want to say that carefully because I think a lot of people read self-help books or they hear from wonderful teachers, Eckhart Tolle and different ones, and they say you need to accept yourself. And a lot of times that's a big struggle at first, because even glancing the direction of parts of the self that we haven't integrated or we haven't learned to love can be a really difficult and awkward phase.
For sure. And to your point of that exact challenge of looking at yourself, I remember first doing videos and people don't believe this because I'm on video all the time and I show up with my hair in a, you know, rat's nest or whatever. And just, here I am. But I remember doing that and going, why is your mouth going like that? Like, what are you doing over there? And your eye shuts down and, oh, look at that wrinkle right there. And well, actually there weren't wrinkles back then, but there are now. So, but I think that's part of that, you know, that insecurity. And also, what I just love that you said, and I'm a big fan of this, is that exposure therapy. It's mm-hmm. it's doing it because eventually we get to a place where we just get over ourselves a lot of the time, over that part that says, okay, are they really here to sit and look at the way my mouth is moving or the information that it's giving?
Well, and having friends who reflect back positively. Julia Cameron was talking with me the other day and she's like, I think you need I call it a believing mirror, somebody who can reflect back. And I'm going to give a shout out to my friend Brent Emler, who's watching right now. And he just texted me a picture of us talking. He said, I think you have a pretty mouth. Thank you, Brent.
I love it. Confidence. That's a good buddy right there.
Right. Believing mirror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But these are, you know, and I think again, Sunny, learning how to become an adult, learning how to create something called being an adult and living in this world, a lot of times we get, how many times were you ever told as a child, quit daydreaming, be responsible? What are some other phrases that come to your mind that you might have heard as a kid?
Grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Act your age.
There you go. And you know what's interesting, and you know, the, I mean, we read the same books and all that, but all the great teachers, the Zen tradition, you know, Christianity, they say you need to regain the beginner's mind. Unless you become like a little child, you can't enter the kingdom of heaven. And it's interesting that we race so fast to get away from being a child, to become an adult, to be successful, to be all these things. And so rewinding the process and saying, okay, I don't lose the skill that I've learned through becoming an adult, but how can I regain the wonder? How can I regain the curiosity, the openness, the lack of knowing for sure how things are supposed to be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And how do we do that? Because I think there's a lot of, it's almost like unlearning, not unlearning the wisdom that we've gained, but unlearning the way of the world, maybe, or society, and how we've been kind of trained into living a particular way, and letting that little girl or that little boy go, or burying them so that we can do what's right, you know, or be the adult we're supposed to be.
I had such an interesting experience of this. You said, talked about how to unwind some of those things. I was sitting in a men's group a few years ago, and the retreat leader handed the talking stick around, and I think there were 12 or 13 of us together. And he said, and these are all, I was one of the few usual suspects for this sort of thing, Sonny. These are tough guys, you know, they're lawyers, and here's a construction, you know, big machine operator over here. Anyway, he's handing the stick around, and he said, okay, what I want you to do is say your name, and then tell us one thing you loved to do when you were a little kid. Mm-hmm. And as that stick passed around, I mean, here's a group of strong, tough guys, and everyone was in tears. And everyone was laughing, talking about the things. You could just feel this, like, oh, right, I used to love things. I used to really take joy in things that didn't make sense, making forts with sticks and all the different things that we said. What, mm-hmm. By the way, what's something you loved as a child?
I was just thinking about that. So I kind of feel like I've been an adult since I was a child. Right. I was always kind of that kind of kid. Like, I read the newspaper when I was six. I would read the dictionary for fun. Like, I couldn't wait to be an adult my whole life. I just was trying to be an adult. But when I think about it, like, the things that I liked to do as a kid were, you know, hopscotch, jump rope, which I have recently tried again 40 years later. And I'm not quite a fan like I was back then. I do it, but it's not quite as much fun, I don't think. But, you know, I think that's what I was thinking about is, you know, I always felt like an adult. And so I think that sometimes for some of us, you know, and I didn't come from an abusive family or anything like that, but people that did sometimes didn't necessarily even know how to be a kid. Right. And so then it's tapping in and going, okay, well, what if? I wonder what it might be like if, and going back and then doing those things like coloring or, mm-hmm. And I think that's a great thing that we've brought back into our society is adult coloring books. Like, people are coloring and bringing that kind of inner joy out and creativity. Right. What was one of your things?
Oh, wow. Well, probably like you. I mean, I was reading, you know, big books when I was little. Did you ever hear You're an Old Soul when you were a little kid?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. So did I. Yeah. But I loved lots of things. My brother Nate and I were just very best friends, and we'd go out in the woods and make forts. And we also were great schemers for enterprises. Like, we almost never had eggnog, and so eggnog was a big deal for us. Every Christmas there'd be like a pint or something that split amongst all these kids. And so we were always like, I think everyone would like eggnog. So we actually designed this eggnog stand, like a lemonade stand. Later in life, we realized, yeah, no one would have bought anything at that stand, but yeah, that would be magic. That'd be great. We'd make $1 million.
Yeah. 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 I was always coming up with things like that too. Like, how I could, you know, I started working when I was nine. So, but how I could like make money, or how I could sell things, or like, that was always, so I always felt like I was kind of a little adult. And I think that was true. That old soul thing was a thing of like, almost like, I've already been here. I've already been through the kid thing. Just let me be an adult. Let me do what I want to do. You know, like, right. Don't bore me with all this stuff.
I don't need to learn the alphabet again.
Right. Why do I have to do that? Exactly.
Yeah.
So somebody says roller skating. Now I did used to love to roller skate. That was one thing I did do for, and I have done that more recently too. And the falls are harder. They're further down and they're harder.
Well, and you know, Sonny, I've had people ask, so whatever it was they said, when, you know, I love to do this when I was a child, but how does that help me now? Like, or how about this? Dreams they had as kids. Mm. I want to be an Olympic gymnast. And now they're 63 years old and their body just can't do that stuff. What do we do with that? You know? And I'm going to ask you, like, if you were sitting with someone and they said, okay, I had this dream and I don't get to do that. What's some way you might encourage them or invite them through the idea of how can this still happen in some way, metaphorically, symbolically, some way that's still satisfying?
Yeah, for me, it's about pulling that energy forward. It's about pulling the passion. It's about pulling the joy, because I think so often we have a tendency to, we pull from the past all kinds of things, and they're usually not pretty. And we can pull the passion and the joy and the excitement and the fun into who we are today, and then channel that in a way that your body can, you know, manage, or that you can do, or you could channel it through writing, or you could channel it through stories. So I think that's a great point, and one that I'm a big fan of, pulling positive energy forward, not just the negative.
Well, yeah, and finding ways to satisfy that dream, because I don't believe in dreams just being these ephemeral things that, you know, you have to lose when you grow up. And I feel like recapturing, restoring some of the creative spirit, some of the connection to the self, means going back and paying attention to things that maybe we're carrying around so much regret over the things we didn't do or didn't accomplish. Mm-hmm. And so being able to go back and pay attention to and even properly mourn some places where we just weren't able to do it back then, but then also say, and how can I express that in some way now? Mm-hmm. You
know? And so what would that, like one gal on here says, I'm an astronaut. I wanted to be an astronaut. So I get the mourning, the parts of, you know, maybe I didn't have the confidence or I didn't have the money to do the thing or whatever it is. But then how do we channel that into a direction now in your 50s or 60s or what have you?
Yeah. Well, I would start by asking a lot of other questions and find out what was behind that desire.
The astronaut piece. So it's right. Not necessarily the end result, but the yeah. But how we got there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you love the stars? Did you love the feeling of the idea of flying? What was it? You know, so start taking this thing apart a little bit and saying, what was underneath that desire that you really wanted? And in what ways can we go there? Can we fulfill that, you know?
Yeah.
I was a violinist and I still am. I guess it's like riding a bike, but I think right now if I picked up my violin, it'd have to be like with training wheels again. But when I was a young man, I was in the youth orchestra, and my family really didn't have the resources to, you know, invest in all the camps and the travel and all the stuff. And I felt a lot of regret about that. And you know, later in life I was able to say, okay, was it the violin? Because I talked with my teacher in the middle of that orchestra process and said, do I really have what it takes to become a professional violinist? And she said, well, you have what it takes, but I don't know that you are willing to give up as much of your life as it would take to create that goal. Mm-hmm. Like you'd need to, you're 15 now, you would need to basically not do anything else but stay in your room and practice, you know, for the next 5 or 6 years to even get to the level. Mm-hmm. And so later in life, I began to look back and say, I'm actually glad, because it was my creative nature that wanted to express in that way, but it wasn't that particular thing. I was also a singer. I also did some acting. There were a number of different ways, but it wasn't until later that I began to own the earliest thing that I said to my parents, Sonny, which was at 10 years old, I walked out in the living room and said, I want to be a writer. Mm-hmm. Because I was reading books and I loved books. I said, I want to be a writer. And, you know, before that, I had said astronaut and I had said firefighter and different things. But that was the first one that was like came right from the inner self. said, I want to be a writer. And they were very supportive. And they're like, that's a great idea. Well, I immediately walked away from that. You know, I just thought I'd need to go find other ways of earning money and all of these things. And it wasn't until age 34, that I began to really pay attention to that again. And so I feel like the creative self drops clues. And sometimes it's not in the individual, the idea, like I want to be a violinist or a singer. Sometimes it's saying, I want to truly express. And so that can be a long process sometimes of finding out, how do I want to express? What's my real gift?
Yeah. Yeah. And which channel it's going to be. And we try a lot of different ones.
Yeah.
You know, searching.
Yeah.
So you are a great writer. I mean, every time I see a post, and I don't see much on social media, but when I do, and you take the time and the energy, and you put a lot of, well, I don't know if you put a lot of thought into it, but your words are always really just well spoken. And they're usually comments or ideas that I absolutely agree with. And so even though I know that oftentimes they're kind of a little bit far out, I'm right there with you in most of them. We're both a little far out. But when you started really investing in writing, because I think this is something like, you love writing, right? That's something you really love to do. It's a form of expression for you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't love writing. I do write. And I think that it's important and it's necessary, but like, I don't love the process of it. I like the process of talking. So for people that, like, if you were working with someone like me who knows they have messages and wants to get a message out into a book or even just start writing, but they don't love the act of writing. Like it's you know, it's kind of solitary and, you know, and introverted. And for those of us that are like, okay, well, can I write around people? Not really. That doesn't work so well. How would you walk somebody, or what suggestions would you have, Jacob? Because I know that's what you do. You help people tap into that and express that. And, you know, for me, Randy, our publisher, really helped me with a lot of different suggestions when I was, you know, going, okay, well, I got to put every single thing I've ever done in my whole life in this one book. And he's like, Sunny, you're going to write more. And I'm like, oh no, this is like torture for me. I'm not ever going to write another book. And he's like, I guarantee you'll write another one. Like, nope, not gonna. So what would you say for people that are in that place? Because there's so many people that have a message right now that want to get it out.
Well, first of all, I think, you know, sometimes learn to use a hammer and you think everything's a nail. So I don't feel like everyone should write. I think that writing is wonderful. And I think that there's so many ways of getting it done. If you really do need to see it in physical form or print or some version ebook like that. There are so many people who can help with that. There's ways of collaborating with people who are good writers.
Sure.
But also, Sunny, I mean, we're doing it right now, real time. You don't have to make a book anymore. Mm-hmm. You can podcast. I think podcasts are incredibly influential. You know, doing these videos, I mean, TikTok, look at that, 30-second videos. So what I'm trying to say is, I really approach, many people have come to my writing courses. I no longer call them writing courses. They're just about creativity now, but they've come saying, I want to write a book. And as we've done that exploration together, turns out they didn't really want to write a book. They wanted to find a form of expression of their creative nature. And so going into that, we can often find a better fit, because you said the word earlier, alignment. And that's one of the key things about in my new book is, you know, getting aligned with who we really are. Mm-hmm. Once we find that alignment, it gets a lot easier. We quit fighting it all the time.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And I think, you know, for me, I wanted to write and I knew that I had something to say, and I knew that it could make a difference in people's lives. And the challenge for me was, can I settle myself down enough and focus enough to actually find the words? Because I love books. I'm a bookaholic. And yet to challenge myself, and it was a challenge for me. And I've written a lot of books since, but that first one was what kind of broke through. And then from there, it wasn't that it was so hard. It was just that it's not, I don't think it's my nature. My nature is this right now. Right. And I think there are people that have these messages that they want to share. And I think it's great that you just said that, because, you know, that you just want to share, express yourself in a way that fits and is in alignment for you. And it might not be a book, and that's okay.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you know, you're doing something that's so natural for you. You know, I have to, as an introvert and somebody who doesn't really love to be on video, I have to go take my vitamins and go, okay, I'm going to do this with Sunny tomorrow. And no, and it's great. And I actually love doing it, but it's not as natural for me, let's say, as I'm writing. And so looking for the natural style.
Yeah.
And then, but really paying attention to what is it that I want to create? What is it, whatever it is I'm making, my brother was one of those guys. He just said, I remember talking with him a few years ago. We were walking through the offices of this company he was the head of, and he was asking me about the book I was writing. And then he stopped and he kind of had this wistful look in his eyes, and he says, you know, I'm just not that creative. And then we walked into his office, Sonny, and he's a computer coder and designer. And so he had three screens, and it looked like the Matrix, you know, all this code and going. And I said, and he sat down and I watched his face light up, and he kind of forgot I was there, and he's sitting there working on stuff. And I said, Nate, to me, this looks like Mozart, just the design version of it. And he turned and said, wow, I've never thought about it that way. But truly, people think of being creative as some sort of artistic expression. I think that whatever you get lost in, whatever you truly get lost in, you feel alive, you lose track of time. Those are clues. Those are clues.
Yes, absolutely. I agree 100%. And I think we have to be open to the clues too.
Right.
Because sometimes we're, you know, like I would say I'm not a writer, and then you're not open. You're just, you know, closed to that, or I'm not a speaker, or I'm not a teacher, or whatever it happens to be. And that creative expression can come through in lots of different ways.
So I'm curious, Sonny, it was funny. I just had the session with a client a few minutes before we started here. And this came out again. I'm curious, what would you say, just what comes to mind now that you've, you know, developed things so well over the years? What do you think some of your top gifts are?
I think I have a great ability to connect.
Mm-hmm.
To connect with people and to connect to people and to connect other people. So, and I think that I also am really open to vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two gifts that I have that I've gotten comfortable with over the years, to be able to share where I'm at, what I'm in, whatever those challenges are, whether they feel great to share or not, which most of the time they don't. and be able to help create that connection and have that transparency.
Yeah, that's amazing. I asked because I think a lot of people are searching for their gift and for their purpose, and they feel like it's this thing that once they find it, the rest of their life will make sense. They're like, I could just, and I know this to be true because in my life, ever since I was a very young child, it was like, if I could just figure out what my real purpose is, then I would lock in, right?
Yep.
And what's interesting to me about gifts, think about a gift. Someone comes and hands you something. You didn't work hard for it. It just showed up. Sometimes the most natural thing that you do is your gift, and you don't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing you do without even thinking hard about it. Now, a gift can be developed. So let's say, as sure, a child, I wanted to write. And I began to have experiences of writing things that I didn't think of as writing. I was doing an assignment for class in college. My English professor came and said, can I read this assignment you wrote? And I said, well, sure. And she's like, I just want to share it with the class. She read a few different ones. And after she read mine, the class paused and everyone clapped. And I'm like, and I was genuinely confused. It felt really good, but I was confused because it's like, I just dashed it off as quick as I could and handed it in. And I think that everyone who's watching or listening right now might start to look through your life and think, what are the things that I do naturally?
Yeah.
Maybe it's not the job I do, but what are the things I do naturally? And so you take a raw gift, and then it's up to us to develop it, to refine it, to make it into something. But I think a lot of people are searching for their gifts. It's kind of like I think it was Rumi who said, you run from room to room looking for the treasure when the diamond necklace is already around your neck, right?
Yeah. Yes. And that's such a great It's such a great point, because I think that, you know, like in my case, if I were to, I'm just naturally that way. I'm a sharer and I just share whatever shit I'm in and I don't even think of it. And people, I remember when I wrote Invoking the Archangels, my first book, and after I wrote it, there, the, you know, my, you know, clients and students were so excited. And so they, the first couple of days after it came out, people email, "Oh my God, I can't believe how vulnerable you were." And I was like, I better go read what the hell did I write? Like, I thought, oh my gosh, I must've shared some family secrets or something. And I'm like, what part? And then they said, I'm like, oh, that's just what happened, you know? And so I think that's really true, that a lot of times you don't, just like you said, you just don't even think about it as being something, because it's just who you are.
It's already there. It's invisible. Yeah. So asking people, if you have some close friends, asking people, what do you think my gifts are? Mm-hmm. That can really be helpful.
Yeah. Well, and I agree with you with purpose. I talk about that a lot with my community too, because it's always like this end of a rainbow thing. And at the end of the rainbow, I discover what my purpose is, and then I fulfill it, and then all is well. And it's like, it's not like that. It's already within you, number one. And the expression of it, I think, changes too. Our purpose shifts as our lives shift, and it doesn't mean that it goes from, you know, your purpose as a fireman to your purpose as a hospice worker, but it means that as you shift, then purpose shifts with you, because wherever you're at in that moment is part of the big picture of purpose.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Eric Meisel, he's written 50 books, and he's a psychologist, and he's developed his own philosophy. He's an amazing guy. We did a writing course with him earlier this year, Sonny. And I was the silent fly on the wall who helped advance the slides and, you know, make sure the questions got passed through. But he was teaching this class, and he said, people look for a single purpose. He said, I don't believe in a single purpose. He said, I believe that we have many purposes. He said, after I'm done here, I'm going to go in the living room and I'm going to have a glass of wine with my wife. And that's fulfilling another purpose, which is to take pleasure in life and to have wonderful relationships. And I love that. He's like, right. He was said, we're talking about writing and we're going to help you figure out how to write your book. But he said, that's only one of your purposes. He said, if you can begin to realize that your purpose is to be alive and to be alive in every part of your life, you suddenly quit hoping that someday the purpose fairy will come along. These are my words now. Right. The purpose fairy will come along and say, here's your purpose, you know? Right.
And you've arrived. This is
there
it.
Hold on tight. Mm-hmm. Now you're legitimate. Now you're legitimate.
Yeah, absolutely agree. 100%. I use those exact words. Your purpose right now is to be present in this experience. And maybe in 3 hours, your purpose is to make dinner for your family and to move your body and all of it matters.
So let me ask you this, Sonny, what about?
I love that you're interviewing me too.
Well, it's a lot more fun for me when I'm not just sitting here rattling off stuff. You said it was off the cuff, you know?
I didn't know. That's what I love it.
Curious. What about, so you and I were those types when we were kids, very, you know, sounds like serious, probably had adult level vocabularies pretty early. And I'm curious if you had the experience of being early on having a sense of urgency about your purpose, like needing to fulfill some sort of mission, but you weren't sure what it was back then. Does that sound familiar?
Absolutely. I always felt that way. I mean, when I was in fifth grade or sixth grade, I thought I was going to be the president. And then everybody told me women can't be president. So I'm like, oh, okay, well then I'll be a teacher. Cause that was the other choice. Right. But I always felt like there was something greater than me inside of me. Mm-hmm. And then I lost my way. I had a baby as a teenager and I went through a lot of different challenges and things. But I was always seeking that thing. And if I think that if I had known then what I know now, that all of those things were part of the purpose, you know, had I not had a child at 18 and gone through all that, I wouldn't have the empathy and the compassion that I did to work with so many women that have gone through this, or the miscarriages that I went through, or the, you know, the betrayal, all those different things. helped me. They were all part of the purpose, but I was always searching for it, like we were talking about, and feeling like there's something I'm meant to do, and didn't realize that most of that time I was doing it. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't in a pretty package.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. When I was, you know, I'm getting a weird echo, so I'm hearing my voice twice. Do you hear that?
Nope.
Oh, good. Okay. Comes and goes. I can hear my voice once, but hearing it twice is a little bit.
That just might put you over the edge.
That might be just the thing. No, when I was a kid, I did a play in high school called The Other Wise Man by, I think it was Henry Van Dyke. It's an old, old story about the three wise men going to find the Christ child. And then there was this other guy, and he kept trying to catch up with his partners to go do this grand mission. And all through his life, he kept spending parts of the treasure that he meant to bring to the Christ child to rescue a slave. And he did all these wonderful things. And right at the end, he I think he got hit on the head or something. He was dying. And it came to him that he had fulfilled the purpose. Like he had been all along. Everything that looked like a detour or a mistake or all these obstacles to getting there, the magical there, he'd actually been doing it the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Love that. I love that.
Yeah.
So true. So true. So Jacob, tell us about your new book, because I want to share the link with them, and then we're going to ask a couple of off the cuff questions. Just fun. Off the cuffs.
Oh, great. That'll be fun. Uh-huh. What do you want to know about the new book?
Well, so you said there was like a three part. So what, who's it for? Who's this book for? The Creative Cure book.
Yeah. You know, my heart in writing this, and I talked with Randy, everything from the cover design to how we put it together, I said, can we please, like, I would love it if people who already know they're creative and feel stuck feel attracted to get this book. But what I would love it really to be able to speak to are people who don't feel like they're creative. I would love it if it could reach across and help us, everyone, remember who we really are and begin to heal that connection to the creative self. Because I feel like we're in a time right now that, you know, here we are. That's the most cliched thing to say ever. This is a crazy year. We're in a crazy time, but we are. Mm-hmm. And it feels like everything that we know is being just shaken and torn apart. And who knows what the structure will look like after it's all said and done. But Pablo Picasso once wrote, every act of creation is first an act of destruction. Mm-hmm. And so what I want to say, Sonny, is that right now, the times we're living through right now, everyone who's listening or watching this, you're here and we need you. We need, you know, it's not the World Economic Forum saying this. It's all of us saying together, we need each other. We need each other to be open and curious and vulnerable and clever and loving and connecting. We need all of these different things that are part of being creative. We need us to do that right now. Humanity needs us to do it. So if you want to look for a purpose, say, how can I create, connect to my true creative self and heal that connection and begin to, within my own arm's reach, do more of that, mm-hmm. with my relationships, with the work that I do, with all of it, how can I do more of that? Mm-hmm. Because I feel that that brings health to the person. And a healthy organism, a healthy person, naturally lends and gives health to those around them. So you want to heal the world, you want to change the world, that's where I say start. Heal the connection to your creative self.
Yeah, amen. I 100% agree. Absolutely. Beautiful. Well, there's the link to the book, guys. www.creativecurebook.com. So you can go and check it out there, get the information, look at the pre-order there. All right. I'm going to ask you a couple off the cuff questions now.
All right.
Okay. If you could have a billboard anywhere in the world, where would it be and what would it say?
Wow. That's a great one. I don't know why, but the city of Dubai came up. I've never been there. I don't really know much about Dubai. And it would say, I love you.
I love that. That's a great place to put it. I think there's lots of people there, I've heard. I haven't been there either, but.
Yeah.
Okay, do you have a bucket list item? Do you have a bucket list, first of all? And if you do, is there an item on there that you're excited to get checked off?
Wow, I don't really have a list, but I've always wanted to go to Fiji. So that's definitely out there.
And is it just, do you just feel guided to that? Is there something energetically that pulls you, or it's just a beautiful place, or?
I don't know why it's been on that. I don't have a list anywhere, but it's been on my mental list for at least 10 years.
So okay. You're being called there.
Yeah.
I love that. I love it when we're, you know, we don't know why we're guided, but we're just pulled. Love that. Okay. What is an interesting fact about you that most people don't know?
Ooh. Let's see. Wow, I have several of those. Some of them probably shouldn't be aired.
Just off the cuff, anything can be aired here.
Well, I worked my very first job at age 13, I was a daffodil picker.
Oh.
Yep.
Wow. And what do you do with daffodils?
Well, in Washington State, they had the most daffodils, I think, this side of like Holland. And so we would pick them and put them in bunches and then go sell them. And we had a thing called the daffodil parade that they would use them in.
Huh.
Oh, I got paid $4 an hour or something, Sonny. And it was, you know, rain was coming down. It was something else. Yeah.
Not bad. Okay. Daffodil. I mean, you know, there are lots of jobs. You're like, somebody actually does that. You know, sometimes you go, oh, somebody picks these. Like there's so many fascinating jobs out in the world. That's usually where questions actually is, what was your first job? So you just answered two in one.
Okay.
Love it. Okay. How do you define success?
Oh, becoming who you really are. Becoming who I really am. I feel like that, and I did so much learning and chasing of it, Sonny, for so long. And to me, the greatest success, the most creative project ever, is just to become who I really am and keep doing that and doing it more and finding out what it means.
Mm. And it's a great project, isn't it? It's ongoing.
Right? Weirdest line.
That's right. Never ending until we no longer need it.
Right.
What is one thing that you have bought in the last year that you can't live without?
Wow, that's a good question. I bought a chair. I moved into a new apartment. I gave everything away. I mean, almost everything in my old house away, and moved into this new apartment that has a great view. And I bought a chair that goes in my bedroom that I didn't have before. That's now my reading and writing corner, Sonny. And it's the most incredible, comfortable leather cockpit chair. It was used, and I bought it for another writer, and it's incredible. So yeah.
Huh. I love that.
Yeah.
You bet. So did you feel some energy in it when it was somebody else's? Are you that kind of guy that like, okay, I can feel this energy and that helps me channel it? Or is it, I got to clear this energy?
Maybe a little of both. He's a buddy of mine. So, you know, maybe some both. Yeah, no, we're friends. I would love the energy. He's written 30 books or something. So I want to channel some more of that, being prolific with writing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Okay, last question for you. If there's one thing that you would want to leave with the audience, one message that you would want to leave with them, Jacob, what would it be?
I just want you to know that who you really are is enough. Mm. Who you really are is enough. And if you can just stay on the journey, on the project of finding out who that is and loving that, that really does have all of the answers you need for your life right now. And for everything you look around and say, how can I deal with this? You're enough. It's all right in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even when it doesn't feel like it, it is there.
Yeah. And I have on my website, I have a free download. It's called How to Establish Your Creative Self Journaling Practice. And people go, oh, I'm not a journaler. It's like, that's not about that. It's really just three questions you ask and answer every day for about 10 minutes or 5 minutes or something. How do I feel? What do I need right now? Sometimes it's, I need to get up and go pee. Mm-hmm. And what would I love? And those three questions, if you'll make a practice of asking and answering them on paper every day, for 5 to 10 minutes, you'll find that you begin to restore that connection to your creative self. And you begin to slowly, slowly learn that I really am enough and that the answers are all in there.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I am enough. That's a beautiful message. We'll take it. Thank you. Okay. So if they want to go to your website, is it jacobnordby.com or?
Yeah. And most people misspell it. I hear Jacob Nerdy. I hear Jacob Nord. Nordby is Nord, like David, B like boy, Y, Nordby. jacobnorby.com.
Awesome. All right, my friend. Thank you so much. Thanks for being with us. Thank you all.
Thanks for inviting me.
You bet. It was great to spend some time with you. Thank you all for joining us. I hope that you enjoyed it. Again, you can go and check out his new book at creativecurebook.com, or you can go to jacobnordby.com and get that download. Journaling is something I always suggest, and so many people have resistance to it. So even better, go grab that PDF to get you moving. So thanks guys so much. Mwah. Have a fantastic rest of your day, and we'll see you tomorrow for Off the Cuff Live at 1:11 p.m. Pacific time tomorrow. I'll be doing readings. See you there. Thank you so much for listening to Off the Cuff with SDJ. If you gained some knowledge, if you felt a connection, if you got some ahas or insight into this thing we call life, if you feel like you're a little more elevated than you were before you listened to this podcast, then please subscribe to this podcast. And if you're already signed up, please rate and review it. I'd greatly appreciate it. If you want to get more information about me and what I have to offer, go to my website, sunnydonjohnston.com. Thanks so much, my friend, and I hope to see you next week.